Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's July 23rd. Currently 61 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 63 degrees under mostly sunny skies. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, Utah. It's time for a look at your Wasatch Back forecast for this Wednesday. We're looking at a mixture of mostly sunny skies out there, really, across most of the area. Park City, we're going to see those high temperatures climbing into the low to mid 80s this afternoon with mostly sunny skies. The Heber Valley, look for lots of sunshine. We'll see those highs climbing into the upper 80s to right around 90 degrees. Overall, looking dry and warm, but slightly below average across the region as we go throughout your Wednesday afternoon. Now, as we move into your Thursday, look for a few more clouds. We'll call it partly cloudy skies for your Pioneer Day in Park City and in the Heber Valley. Now, rain chances are going to be very slim, but they will exist for at least a chance of a pop-up shower in the afternoon. Again, most of the day will be dry. Most of us will stay dry, but there is that very slight chance that you may capture that one pop-up shower as you go throughout your Pioneer Day afternoon. So keep that in mind, but don't cancel your outdoor plans. And I wouldn't be too concerned about rainfall overall during the day. High temperatures will still be in the low 80s in Park City. We'll see those highs in the upper 80s to right around 90 for the Heber Valley. As we move into your Friday, look for the sunshine to return. High pressure rebuilds across the area and sets up shop. That means highs will get a little warmer, so we'll be into the mid-80s this weekend for your Friday, Saturday, and Sunday out there in Park City, and we'll see those highs in the low 90s, low to even mid-90s for the Heber Valley by the time we get towards your Sunday. So, again, a warming trend as we go into the weekend, but still remaining on the dry side. And as we go into next week, looking mainly dry and warm to start off the week with lots of sunshine, highs in the upper 80s in Park City, with highs in the low to mid-90s in the Heber Valley as we kick off the week. Could see a few extra clouds and maybe a pop-up shower by the time we get towards the middle of next week, but that's pretty far out there. For now, rain chances, again, remaining slim to none over the next 7 days with those temperatures warming up into the weekend. Let's look at your latest forecast from ABC 4 Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with KPCW's general manager, Juliana Alali, along with development director, Sarah Irvin. We're going to be talking about what's next now that Congress has rescinded federal funding for public media, including KPCW. Later on, the founder of Kept Current, Karen Bell, and Chris Campbell with the Mountain Mediation Center have details on the first on the Kept Kind project happening throughout the area this weekend. And finally, the executive director of the Hope Alliance, Diane Bernhardt, with details on their upcoming fundraiser. Then stay tuned for The Mountain Life. Today's guests include Sonita Alizadar, a rapper, activist, and now author whose new book, Sonita, My Fight Against Tyranny and My Escape to Freedom, shares the gripping story of her escape from the Taliban regime after being sold as a child bride in Afghanistan. Then research professor and geophysicist Gideon Eshel talks about his new book, Planetary Eating, which dives deep into how our food choices affect the Earth and what we can do about it. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life, of course, heard every Wednesday from 9 to 10. Taking a look now at some local news. The Colville City Council has rejected a developer's bid to annex its land south of town and to build 75 homes. KPCW's Connor Thomas has the update on the Hoytsville area development.
Colville Council members voted 3-1 to turn down an annexation petition from Larry H. Miller Real Estate July 14th. The petition concerned just over 300 acres south of town behind the Red Hills subdivision, and the land was formerly within the proposed Cedar Crest Village. The larger Cedar Crest project, which could have brought thousands of homes to Hoytsville over the next few decades, stalled at the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission last year. Now the downsized version of the project, dubbed Hidden Meadow, has died too. It had proposed building 75 homes, ranging in price from $700,000 to $2 million. Councilmember John Hansen summed up the feelings of Hoytsville residents he spoke to this way.
Their words are, please do not let this go through right now. We're not ready for it. Maybe when we're ready for it, but we're not.
City Councilmember Louise Willoughby reiterated her thoughts from the June Colville City meeting, where she first made a motion not to consider Larry H. Miller's annexation petition. No one seconded that motion June 23rd, but by July 14th, Councilmembers Hansen and Lynn Wood voted with her. Wood's top concern has been city staff's ability to process such an application. Here's Willoughby.
We need to address the housing issue, and by opening up more and more of these multi-million dollar subdivisions, or whatever we may want to call them, farming areas, it isn't helping.
Brandon Brady was the lone council member who said he was willing to take up the annexation petition. If the council had done so, it still would have been able to approve or deny the annexation at a later date. Councilmember Sean Powis was absent from the vote. Larry H. Miller Real Estate still owns roughly 1,000 acres in Hoytsville, which is in unincorporated Summit County. It's unclear what the developer may do with that property. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
As we've reported, KPCW is facing an ongoing $264,000 annual loss due to congressional approval of the $1.1 billion cut to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, of which KPCW is a recipient. While the threats to pull back funding goes back decades, this time it did have the congressional support to do it. The amount is about 15% of KPCW's annual budget. In the studio to tell us what the plans are to cover the shortage going forward, I have General Manager Juliana Ollily along with Development Director Sarah Irvin. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
So we've got 15 minutes here. I guess what's the most important thing for members or fans of the local news hour to hear from you?
I think the most important thing for them to hear is that, as you just said, Leslie, that we are facing a shortfall for this fiscal, this upcoming fiscal year, 2026. We're also going to be facing that in 2027, but we're focused right now on this immediate need to help us respond to this abrupt loss of funding. You know, I appreciate Congress and the White House's efforts to identify efficiencies, but the way they've gone about it is just very disruptive for organizations who've counted on, like KPCW, who've counted on and budgeted around long-time support. And so we're just trying to make the community very aware of this, and so we're fundraising around some of it. But we are also working to identify, I am, as well as the board, are working to identify some efficiencies within our budget to see if there are some things we can cut.
Yeah, so this comes, what, 2 months before our new fiscal year starts?
5 weeks.
5 weeks.
Yeah, August 31st. So abrupt is, a good word for it.
Yeah. So how has the money that the station has received all of these years been spent? I mean, is it unrestricted dollars? You can spend it however you need to?
Not exactly. They're about a quarter of what we receive is required to be spent on national programming. So things like our BBC coverage and our NPR coverage. And then the other 75% can be spent just on general operations and programming.
Okay, so what is the plan going forward?
So what, and I'll let Sarah chime in here, of course, because right now what we've mostly been, Sarah and I have mostly been doing is galvanizing some of our core supporters, the people that have been out there for us. You know, operationally they continue to support, as well as who helped us with the capital campaign that was not too long ago to help build out and expand our studios.
Yeah, we've been hearing from very concerned supporters in the community, folks who have been longtime supporters, reaching out, of course, to all of our donors, to the Capital Campaign. All of our Broadcasters Club members have been hearing from us. But I think what we're really looking for right now are the folks that tune in every morning to the local news hour who maybe haven't given to the station before. This is certainly the time. If you rely on, you know, Leslie's local news interviews to know what's happening around town, the road and traffic updates, the weather updates, you know, lost and found, mm-hmm. all of these are services that, you know, we have to fundraise for. And that are, they're certainly free to the community, but they're not free for us to produce and provide. And so, you know, I wanna make mention of the fact that in the last 5 days, we have seen a tremendous number of donations come in. I wanna absolutely thank everybody who has heard our call, answered our phone calls or responded to the emails, clicked on that donate button. We've seen, I did a quick count this morning, 130 donations have come in since Friday, which is certainly an uptick from our normal July cadence. But we have thousands of folks in this community. You know, just a simple math on the subscription rate for the local alone. We have over 6,300 subscribers to that daily newsletter. You know, it would be incredible if every single person who receives that newsletter could make a donation. We have a former DJ, Joey DeSimone. He reached out over the weekend with a great challenge. He donated $100. And he said, I challenged 2,349 other people. No, my math is wrong there. What's 264? 2,639 right. other people to donate $100, and we would immediately make up our shortfall.
Yeah, and that's all it takes. It's not that I don't think it's that hard, but of course, if it is that difficult for you, a $10 donation
Absolutely.
Makes the difference. You know, it just builds up the support and makes us feel good about what we're doing here and recognize that the things that the services that we're providing are valued in the community.
Yeah. That of that 130 new donations, are they new donors or are they the same old people who have continued to
support
the station?
So it's a combination. You know, we haven't run a full report yet, but just anecdotally, certainly a lot of familiar names in there. But there's been some tremendous messages that we've received saying, you know, I've been listening for years. I haven't donated before. I'm finally doing it. So we are hearing that as well, including also new Broadcasters Club members. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to share an incredible challenge that we have from a very generous community member. A gentleman named Damian Lee gave us a call on Friday as soon as he heard the news. And he said, listen, I want to put forward a challenge. And with his permission, I'm sharing it now. He has challenged 12 new Broadcasters Club members at that $1,000 level. He will match. He will make a $12,000 gift to the station if 12 new people join at that $1,000 level. Of course, if you want to join at a level higher than the $1,000 a year Broadcaster Club membership, we have levels higher that that we certainly would welcome you at, the Sterling level at $1,500, the Gold level at $2,500. But Damian has very generously offered to increase his annual support to the station to basically put forward a $12,000 donation if new members join the Broadcasters Club, adding up to that $12,000. So I'm challenging folks now, 12 of you, please. If you've been considering joining the Broadcasters Club, we'd love to hear from you and help us receive that match from Damian Lee.
Let's talk a little bit on the philosophical side of things and why KPCW should receive federal funding. I mean, what makes us any different than other Park City media groups? I mean, things like the Park Record or the Town Lift. I mean, they also provide daily digital sources of local news and information.
Well, KPCW is a 501c3 organization, a nonprofit organization recognized by the IRS. So that's one big difference from some of our fellow media organizations in the community. And this federal funding and support for public media, you know, it's not just radio, it's television, right? PBS was established in 1967 by Congress in order to have a news that was uninfluenced, unbiased, it was not politically motivated, and it was not commercially motivated. It was not motivated by profits, right? It was just, this is the information that you, the community, need to have to make be an educated and informed citizen about the community that you're living in, as well as the greater nation that we all share together.
Yeah, and I think, you know, another aspect of that is that we are not a for-profit organization. We do have underwriters, but they are held to very strict standards of that's why you hear the spots that you hear without, you know, flowery language or calls to action, you know, we're the best restaurant in town. You won't hear that on KPCW. And there are reasons for that. Those are FCC rules and guidelines. I think that, you know, there is certainly an argument to be made that in this day and age of, you know, people getting news on their cell phones, why do we need public media infrastructure? The reality is not everybody has cellular service. Not every place is built on these digital infrastructures that now exist and that we think everybody has access to. But I can tell you, I live in Pinebrook, and I live in a dead zone in Pinebrook where if my Wi-Fi goes out and I have no cell service, it is an absolute cell dead zone. So the only thing I do get at that moment in time, and that Wi-Fi goes out fairly regularly. I think they're doing a lot of work in the roads. It's radio. I only get the radio signal. And so, you know, there is truth to the fact that this is a public good. And, you know, emergency alerts, you know, go back to the Parley's wildfire, right? KPCW was the source on the ground working with those PIOs, those emergency responders. We have the access to the airwaves to get those emergency alerts, evacuation notices out to the community quicker and more efficiently than any other infrastructure that exists today. And I think, you know, we want to continue offering all of these services across all of the platforms that we can, but radio is the core of what we do. And we've certainly invested a lot lately in our digital expansion. We'll continue continue to, because we know that's where people want to receive their news. Right. They want to be able to pick up their phone, scroll through their social media feed, and see local news stories. And so that also is a huge part of what we have prioritized. But radio, as far as being a public good and why there should be public dollars behind it, it's like roads. It's like... You know, basic
education.
Infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's no longer the reality, right? I mean, I think we need to move on from that. But back to, you know, as a nonprofit, that means that any profit or any money we make actually goes back into the
community.
Right? Yeah. So we have no shareholders. We have nobody that, you know, that we need to pay or, you know, answer to. I mean, we answer to the community. And really, that's what it's come down to, you know? I mean, the funding's been pulled back. I can't imagine it being reinstated, at least for several years. But this is difficult, certainly now and right now. But in the long run, I mean, I think that people think it's like, maybe this is how it should be. For people who use services, they should be responsible for paying for them. I mean, we hear it day in, day out on all of the funder credits, we call them, mm-hmm. you know, after every funding credit, it's listeners like you. And that's, I think, what the reality is here. If, in fact, you tune in, you check the website, you check social media, if that's how you're getting local news and information, then you know what? Step up.
Exactly. Yeah. I would really encourage anyone and everyone who has made a comment on one of our Facebook posts or on our social media post, Instagram posting. If you've made a comment, you should make a donation. And sorry, we haven't said it yet. And I know we're not actually, well, we are. At kpcw.org, that's how you can make a donation. Click on the donate button. Head to the Broadcaster Club page. So if you have the time to consume the services and take in the services that we're providing and make comments on the coverage, the amazing political forum that we held last night for the Park City City Council. And those forums, we're going to be having them going forward. So if you believe in that engagement and that community service, please make that donation. Make a $10 donation, make a $100 donation, make a $10,000 donation, whatever you are comfortable with, because we do need to hear from you. Because Leslie's right, if we are not able to sustain the services without revenue, our services will have to look very different.
Yeah, and going forward here, I mean, I'm not making threats here. That's not the idea here. But what does that look going forward, Juliana? Of course, you know the station's biggest expenses are the personnel. So how do you and the board start to look at that?
So I've got this great spreadsheet, and everybody who works here knows I love a good spreadsheet, and it's got multiple columns. I've got a column that's sort of the unthinkable, and then there's a column that's, ooh, this would be difficult, and then there's a column that, okay, these are things that we can do. It's the things like how we gather as a major donor group, how we service our Broadcaster Club members, you know, the way we gather will start to look different almost immediately. You know, we'll continue to get together, of course, with our ski events, because those are events that we have a sponsor, we have a community partner that we're working with, so we're able to continue to do those kind of things, but our parties will just start to feel a little bit different. The past several years, we've, as an organization, we've been able to send some of our employees to conferences to engage with public media and learn best practices. How we do those are definitely going to look different going forward. We'll probably be looking more at virtual opportunities there. We're at 19 headcount for full-time. There's about eight part-time hosts and producers for our original programming. And then there's a smattering of DJs that we pay over the weekend because the weekend shifts are so critical. I'm not looking at changing any of those headcounts, you know, that we don't, fortunately, we do not have to go there yet. But again, we need to hear from the community who value the services and value the work that we're doing.
So we've got an award-winning journalist, Grace Dorfler,
yes,
covering Wasatch County and all of the communities there in Wasatch County. It's an area where the weekly paper just went out of business. So what kind of return do we see from Wasatch County?
So I haven't been able to run the numbers since Friday as far as these donations that are coming in during this emergency fundraising campaign, but I did pull some numbers from our last major fundraising drive, which was in March. And of the, let's call it just for easy math, 900 donations that we received during that winter pledge drive, 51 came from Wasatch County. So you know, I can't do quick percentages in my head, but I know that
I can say that it's not enough. We need to hear from Wasatch County because we know the things that are happening in your community are so important. You guys need that information. You need the coverage. You need to know what's going on in the schools and the road developments. In order for us to be able to continue to provide those services at the level that you guys have, that we all want to give you and that you could become accustomed to, we need to hear from you.
And one thing I want to mention is that our engagement that we can track with our online metrics and our social media metrics, we know that consumers in Wasatch County, listeners, readers in Wasatch County are consuming our content. Mm-hmm. We are covering Wasatch County tremendously. And so we know that the engagement is there. We are hoping that the support is right there as well. And I did run some quick numbers before this, and as far as local programming versus everything else that we air, of the 960 minutes between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. every weekday, 81% of that is entirely original and local programming. It's you on the local news hour. It's you with morning cut-ins before the local news hour. It's our local news team at noon. It's our DJs throughout the day providing those local voices. It's our local nonprofits with their PSA updates and underwriters, our local underwriters. It's local voices, 81% of that day. If you take out the 6 a.m. and 7 a.m. hours, that number jumps to 91% of what you hear on KPCW is entirely locally focused, locally produced, and it needs to be locally supported.
Yeah. And again, I mean, I don't think we're there yet, but do we start to look at that about, we've always prided ourselves on not having a paywall, but do we start to look at that? Do we start to offer news subscriptions, you know? I mean, and maybe give for those who are generous donors, it's like they get a free ride.
It's something that has crossed my mind, but I don't think that we would have to shift to that. But how our digital services are offered may look different. You know, right now you can read a news story without any sort of interruption, without any sort of promotion, whether it's a please donate now or an underwriting spot from an underwriter at the beginning and at the end. You know, those things might start to look differently.
Yeah. And there's an old adage in public radio that if everyone who listened supported the station, there wouldn't be a funding problem. But the reality is only a very small percentage of those who listen or read the local or goes online to read our stories on the website or our social media contributions. I mean, I think the national average is 10%. Do we have any idea what it is locally here?
I mean, again, anecdotally, just of the, let's call it just the subscribers to the local 6,300 subscribers. Mm-hmm. And we have about
80,000 households.
80,000 households that we reach with our broadcast signal. But on average, no. We're looking at about probably less than 10% of the community actually stepping up and supporting us. So we are challenging folks. We are trying to raise $100,000 by Sunday. We're about halfway there since Friday. So thank you again to everyone who has stepped up. I do want to give a very special thank you to Peggy Bergman, who made a very generous donation at the outset, right on Friday morning. And, big benefactor of the arts and culture. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to just acknowledge and also challenge folks around the community to be like Peggy, be like Damian Lee.
Yeah.
And offer additional challenges to us so that we can put those forward to our listeners. Help us hit that $100,000 by Sunday.
Yeah. Tell your neighbor, tell your friend, hey, I made a donation today. Have you made yours?
Well, and again, I had read somewhere that the annual federal appropriation for public media, relatively small, less than about $2 per citizen per year. Again, that is not much. But again, if we had everyone who listens, reads, or logs online give us $2, we wouldn't need to be doing this right now.
You're right.
All right. Yeah. Anything else?
Well, you will be hearing from us, the community, again in September, because this is, as Sarah said, an emergency fundraiser, very focused on this immediate need because, as we discussed earlier, we are so close to the end of this current fiscal year. We've got to figure out how to bridge that gap. And so you will be hearing from us again in September, September 8th through the 11th.
Yes, and if you are interested in serving as a sponsor for that pledge drive, a local business in town, we would love to hear from you. You can reach out right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Again, you can go online, kpcw.org. You can even call. Joe's here.
Yep.
435-649-9004. And again, it's listeners like you that make this radio station work. So as always, we know that it's the same old names that step up. We're looking for those folks of you who are like, yeah, I like that radio station. And, you know, it's like I got a favorite DJ and I text in, you know, song request. That's what it's going to take, folks. Yes. $2. Well, it's taken months of planning and organizing, but it's happening this weekend. The first ever Kept Kind project. In the studio with details about how to participate, I have the founder of Kept Current and now Kept Kind, Karen Bell. She's also a KPCW DJ and is joined by one of the event's partners, Chris Campbell, with the Mountain Mediation Center. Good morning to both of you.
Hi.
Good morning.
Karen, start by telling us what Kept Kindness is all about. I mean, what inspired you to even start the movement?
Well, what inspired me was that I used to live in San Francisco before I moved here, and got a COVID dog. We'd go out on the trails, and literally every single day, people would ignore me. They wouldn't say hello, not with their eyes, not with a little hand gesture. They wouldn't say hello. And after a while, especially in the middle of COVID, it just got to be this weird thing where you're like, wow, I'm invisible here. And I moved to Park City, and I live on the rail trail, and that first day I brought my dog out on the rail trail, and every single person said hello to me, and they were like, good morning, hi, your dog's so cute, what's his name? You know, all the things, and what a beautiful day. And it was just such a stark contrast to what I had been through. And so immediately I knew Park City was my place. These were my peeps, and I just think there is an inherent amount of an abundance of kindness here. I think it's in our DNA. And this campaign in this weekend is my love letter to Park City.
Okay. And again, you've kind of brought in some partners with the leadership class as well as the Mountain Mediation Center. Chris, how is the center participating in this?
Well, we're working on a kindness conversation on Friday to kick off the weekend. This has been a theme that's been going around the community in various forms, and so Mountain Mediation has been interested in how do we help the community talk about kindness, why is it important, so that people can share stories like Karen's story with each other and learn from each other. And so that when this opportunity, when we found out the overlap between what Mountain Mediation wanted to talk about and what the leadership Park City Class 31 project is, there was a natural alignment there and a great collaboration, and the timing just works really well with Karen's event. So we hope to just kick off the whole weekend, get people thinking about kindness, have a chance to sit with each other and connect, slow down, enjoy the beautiful ranch setting, and just have a lovely evening together.
All right, so tell me Friday you'd mentioned, when, where, what's
so
happening?
So it'll be 5 to 7 p.m. at the Whedon Family Ranch. It's 2 hours. We're going to have some tips and tricks about how to start conversations. There'll be some chances to connect with people, a little bit of food to eat, hang out, just connect, meet somebody new, and have a great time together.
All right. Maybe we need to take a step back. And so it's a 2-day, 3-day event?
Yeah. So it kicks off on Friday with this event with Leadership 31 and Mountain Mediation. And then there's more than a dozen events throughout the whole weekend. So basically, tons of free events happening around town, and they're free. You can come to them. You can go to keptkind.com, and there's a list of all the free events that are happening. It's everything from, you know, a free dog training at the library park on 8 a.m. On Saturday. I have yoga with Claire Wiley at 9 a.m. At the library park, and then with Amber Lind on Sunday. Mary Jo Greenberg is doing a meditation at the community gardens. There's just a ton of different things happening throughout the weekend. And also, an easy way and kind of fun way to get involved if you want is I also have a bunch of restaurants that are participating, and what they're doing is creating a kindness cocktail, Kept Kind cocktail, and all proceeds from that cocktail are going to local nonprofits. So I have Alpine Distilling, I have Tupelo, River Horse, Palomino, and Saltbox, and each of them are going to various nonprofits. So Palomino is going to the Community Foundation, Saltbox is going to the Summit Community Gardens, and River Horse is Clubhouse, Summit County Clubhouse, and Alpine is also the Community Gardens, and Tupelo is Live Like Sam. So all of those nonprofits get to get the proceeds of whatever cocktails that you order from those restaurants.
So the Kept Kind weekend kickoff at the Whedon Family Ranch, people need to register for that, or can they just show up, and where do they go?
For that particular one, go ahead, Chris, sorry about that.
Yeah, they can RSVP at mountainmediationcenter.org/events, and just find a, it's a free event, but please RSVP so we can get a handle on numbers for food.
All right, and then again, where people can go online, Karen, where to figure out where they want to be, because you've got, in addition to Friday, like you mentioned, Saturday and Sunday as well.
Yeah, so there's a whole host of events there for you, and you can go to kepkind.com, check it out, check out the events section. But, you know, also just encouraging people to just really put a spotlight on kindness this weekend. It's not just about the free events. You can participate or not as much as possible, but really what it is just about sending good juju out into the world, and really, you know, there's so many things, negative things in the headlines constantly, and things that bring us apart. And so I really just wanted to put a light and an intention on kindness for a weekend where we can all just, you know, come together and hold the door open. The kindness doesn't have to be these big grand gestures. They could just be small things, but if we all do them and we're all really intentional about them, there's a ripple effect in the community and everybody feels good.
Yeah, so how are you going to measure the success of this kindness project? Is it the numbers, the stories, something a little bit more personal?
You know, I that is a good question. I don't totally have it figured out. I know, there's data that will be collected. But I've had probably about 100 people now come out to my volunteer events. And so over the course of the last, month and a half, 2 months, I've had a series of volunteer days that we've held at Whedon Family Ranch, which is my sponsor, and it's this beautiful property, and people just love coming out there, and they've been writing kindness notes, and they've been making little pieces of artwork that are going to be exhibited at the library, by the way, and you know, those kind notes will be circulated back out into the community. So it's really being co-created by the community, and people don't want to leave these events. It's really funny because I have them from 5 to 7, and usually at 8 o'clock, there's still a bunch of people there because they've just really enjoyed connecting around the table and doing this for the community.
Yeah. So what's this been like then, I guess, for you personally? I mean, building Kept Kindness from an idea to it happening.
Well, it's funny, you know, it's really vulnerable when you put yourself out into the world. And I was like, well, it's out there, and either I succeed or I fail, you know, and in a very public way. And that's super scary, but it also is so validating when people get behind you. And I have had so many people show up and just either open doors, show up for the volunteers, make introductions, just businesses really stepping up. It's just incredible. There's been just a groundswell of positivity and people who really like this idea, and so that feels pretty good personally. But mostly I just want people to feel good. I hope that something delightful happens to people throughout the course of the weekend, even if it's just a really small thing. But you know, that's kind of the intent behind it.
Yeah, so what's next, do you think, for Kept Kindness after this weekend? You're like, never again? Or do you already have your sights set on annual?
Well, I think we'll learn from this, because obviously it's the first year, so we'll take those lessons and build on it. But, you know, the hope is that we do it every year. It's going to be an annual thing. You know, if that's what the community is supporting, then that's what we'll do, and that's the hope. But you do make me laugh, because this has been an incredible amount of work, and people are already like, well, what about the other 363 days? And I'm like, could we please just get through this first, and then we'll kind of think about what's next.
Okay. Chris, again, Mountain Mediation Center will be kind of kicking it off on Friday. People just need to show up, huh?
Show up. RSVP if you can at our website, mountainmediationcenter.org, and then show up 5 to 7 on Friday, meet new people, chat together, learn tips and tricks to start conversations, and share what kindness means to you.
And Leadership 31 is going to be unveiling their project as well.
All right. Anything else you want to mention?
No, that's great. And you can follow us on Instagram. You know, there's Kept Current Park City, and also there's Kept Kind PC are the two Instagram handles. And feel free to tag us. And I hope that something really nice happens this weekend and it's fun for everybody.
Okay. Nice work. Karen Bell, Chris Campbell, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hope Alliance is planning its annual fundraising event, Night Vision. In the studio with details about Hope Alliance and the fundraising effort, I have the executive director, Diane Bernhardt. Good morning.
Good morning.
So start by giving us a brief overview of Hope Alliance's missions and the communities you serve.
Okay, great. Hope Alliance has been around since for the last 26 years. We were founded in Park City. And when we began, we provided services primarily internationally in a broad area, medical, dental, vision, and basic needs like water and sewage. At some point, Hope Alliance changed its focus to focus in on vision care. And so we provide vision care here in Utah. We have a permanent clinic within the People's Health Clinic. We also have a permanent clinic within the Moab Free Health Clinic, which is analogous to our People's Health Clinic. And we practice in Guatemala, Mexico, and in Uganda. Last year also Tanzania. The latest news in Uganda is that Hope Alliance, with many other organizations, just opened a vision clinic at the Bwindi Community Hospital, which doesn't have the equipment yet because it's still in a shipping container, but we're gonna vision care there too.
Yeah. Now, why those three? Guatemala, Uganda, and Tanzania. Why those areas?
You know, that's sort of a pre-me. Those Hope Alliance has been going to those organizations for quite some time. Mm-hmm. In Uganda, it was through a number of people who are in the Morning Rotary Club. Stacy Lippert had long been supporting that hospital. And so she said, wow, this is a perfect match. There's no vision care there. Could you come? And so we did. Guatemala, also going there a long time. I don't even know the history there, but we started working in Mexico about 4 years ago. So that was relatively new.
And as you mentioned, the work focuses on vision care. Why is it such a critical area of a global health, that may get overlooked?
Well, it's critical in so many ways. It's very important to what sort of education you'll end up having. If you can't see, it's very hard to read. It's very hard to see things at distance. It's critical to whether or not you can, what sort of work you can eventually have. So it can mean the difference between poverty and a healthy income. Another important aspect of it is if you can't see well, it affects your interpersonal relationships. For example, I have a son who's visually impaired, and he can't see facial expressions at 5 feet. And many of us communicate via facial expressions. It can set up the whole sociological and psychological part of being human is so dependent on sight.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your upcoming fundraiser titled Night Vision in August. Maybe when, where, and how much?
It is on August 23rd. We're hosting it at a relatively new venue in Park City, which is called the Whedon Family Barn. I think they're calling it the Whedon Family Giving Barn. It's located on White Pine Canyon. I think it's a 12-acre property, and a couple bought it, and they've refurbished all of the property, but particularly this barn. It was a true horse barn, and they've turned it into a party barn. And it's got lots of technology, you know, big screens, a beautiful outdoor area that has fire pits. It's just really exquisite.
Okay, so it's going to be there. How much are tickets? It looks like a lot of your tickets are sold out for the reserved areas.
Well, we still have tickets available for the reserved areas, but a lot of those have sold, which we're really happy about. We have the general tickets are $200, which for Park City, that's really surprisingly low.
And what's going to happen?
And at the event, it's Hope Alliance, kind of a casual organization, so we're there. There's not going to be paddle raises. We're just there to bring our community together and invite other community members to join in, because we're, at least right now, it's kind of family. We're sort of a family kind of organization, so we're going to have a DJ. We'll have some line dancing later in the evening. We have some casino tables, you know, gambling, not gambling sort of thing to raise funds. And the most exciting thing about the event is that Hope Alliance recently acquired a van that we're outfitting to become a vision van. And we'll be unveiling and introducing our vision van to the community that night.
So what are you going to do with the van? How is that going to work?
So the van is primarily for helping and working in Utah. What we found is that while we have these clinics and they're great, we have a lot of wait lists, and we needed to find, we have a wait list in both places. And what we wanted to do was try to find a way to eliminate the wait list, but also to solve the problem of patients getting to physical clinic. So what we're going to do is we're going to put two complete pop-up clinics inside this van and take this van to the Park City School District. We're hoping, we haven't talked to them yet, but we're hoping to work with North and Summit and South Summit school districts to ensure that all the students there have the vision that they need to be successful in school. And while there are other organizations like Hope Alliance in the Salt Lake Valley, there isn't in the rest of rural Utah. So we would like to take the van and partner with schools and clinics in rural Utah so that we can bit by bit at least solve the vision challenge that exists in our community.
Yeah, so you're gonna have those expensive machines in the van, or just the smaller handheld ones?
Yes, they'll be the portable. We will have some expensive machines. Well, what I should say this is they're all expensive machines. Some are just portable. So yes, mostly it'll be portable equipment. However, we will have, because we have the van, and because we won't have to be doing, we're intending to leave all the equipment in the van, store it in a storage locker, allow us to have it charge overnight so that in the morning we're ready to fly. So the equipment, it can be a little bit bigger because we don't have to keep moving it as much as we normally do.
Yeah. All right. So all of the funds raised from Night Vision will directly then go to support the programs that you have?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about, again, you used to do these international trips using volunteers.
We still do.
You still do? Mm-hmm. So what have you got coming up?
So we are going to Mexico the first part of November. We've been there. This will be our fourth time. Typically, it was a shorter trip. We would see patients we'd have two clinic days. But we added a day this year because while we're there, and because there is need, it just seemed more efficient for us to add a day. We're also then going to Guatemala end of February, beginning of March. And we'll be going to Uganda in the summertime, although we haven't determined what that date is. Things are a little bit fluid there right now, considering the clinic being built and the clinic's opening and
yeah.
A lot of moving parts there.
Yeah. And I actually, back in 2018, went to Uganda, and it was really the most fascinating trip because you get to see portions of a country that you would never otherwise see. I mean, we were in the bowels of Uganda, in deep, deep, deep into where some people have never even seen a white person, right? I mean, it was pretty, pretty amazing. How is it that you get those people? I mean, people just need to sign up and...
Yes, they can just go to our website. We've got information about our trips. You can email us there. You can also, can I give an email over the phone? Oh yeah, you could also email lisam@thehopealliance.org. She's our international coordinator, and she could give you a lot of information.
All right, people do pay for the trip, the airfare, and then their stay, mm-hmm. and then volunteer their time to do those clinics.
Yes, and typically what we do is if you're interested in doing a clinic with us internationally, we have training programs at our offices, but we also have you work with our patients here in Park City so that you've got under your belt the experience of being face-to-face working with somebody in a type of work that is, it's relatively intimate. You know, you're serving the community, you're doing humanitarian work, but you're actually seeing the very person that you're serving.
Yeah. And then do you bring along doctors?
Yes, we do. Yes, we bring along optometrists and sometimes ophthalmologists.
All right. And do you still do the collection of eyeglasses and sunglasses that you have done?
Yes, we do the collection, but we also purchase glasses. We've also become a little bit more sophisticated in how we dispense, what sort of dispensing models we use, which might be too geeky to talk about over the radio.
All right. But if somebody needs glasses, you can usually help them, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we accept, and many locations around town used glasses, and we leverage them in a variety of different ways.
Okay. Let's see, anything else you want to tell us about the Hope Alliance?
I could go on for hours, but nothing urgent at this time. Thank you so much.
Okay. Again, thehopealliance.org if people are interested in attending the August 23rd fundraiser.
Yeah, it would be. I think it's going to be a really great time, and we'd welcome the community.
And they can get more about the volunteer international tour trips as well.
Yep.
All right, Diane.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for your time. Diane Bernhardt is the executive director of the Hope Alliance. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, with less than a year to relocate, Recycle Utah says its talks with local officials about a possible spot along US 40 are accelerating. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more.
Recycle Utah Executive Director Jim Bedell said a plan to build a new 30,000 square foot facility with state-of-the-art features has been put on the back burner after talks with Park City and Summit County officials.
We think we need to make that investment as a community now to get our diversion rate up, but we respect the fact that, first of all, we don't have the funding to pay for it. We're a nonprofit.
Park City and Summit County have offered Recycle Utah a four-acre parcel off U.S. Highway 40 near Home Depot, but it hasn't been accepted. Recycle Utah plans to leave its headquarters on Munchkin Road in Park City's Bonanza Park neighborhood by July 2026 due to future development in the area. The existing facility processes 3.5 million pounds of material every year. Bedell said discussions with government officials about the four-acre property are ongoing and accelerated recently.
The role of Recycle Utah in waste diversion is to operate facilities, not build them. There is not a nonprofit in the country that we are aware of that has built waste management infrastructure.
Summit County Manager Shane Scott said on KPCW's Local News Hour Tuesday, funding challenges are still being addressed by Park City, Recycle Utah, and the county.
We'd like to donate the property, and we believe it's worth millions of dollars, $6-7 million. And we think that would be a good location for the operations that they are currently doing at the Munchkin site in Park City.
The Park City Council and Summit County Council are scheduled to hold a joint meeting August 18th. Park City Municipal, Summit County, and Recycle Utah are financial supporters of KPCW. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, Summit County has partnered with the Park City Community Foundation to expand its weekly curbside food waste collection by offering incentives for customers, new and existing. Launched in June of 2024, the Zero Food Waste Project aims to divert all edible and compostable food waste from the Summit County landfill by the year 2030. Foundation board member E.E. Sue says the partnership is one of Summit County's most significant environmental collaborations in recent years. The goal, she says, is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, extend the life of the county landfill, and promote food equity. 1,200 households have signed up for the initiative during the first year, and Sue says they hope to hit 2,000 customers by the end of the year.
We are so excited about Summit County supporting this initiative, and this is what Zero Food Waste has been all about. It's about the community coming together. It's working together to reduce what's going into our landfill, divert our waste, and make Park City a better place to live.
According to Summit County Solid Waste Superintendent Tim Loveday, as much as 50% of the landfill's volume could be food. Reducing that load could delay costly expansions. For now, through the end of the year, new Summit County customers can sign up with a promo code that'll cover the cost of the weekly curbside service. Customers will pay only a one-time startup fee of $25 for a 5-gallon bin or $50 for a 16-gallon bin. Existing customers who for a new customer can also earn 2 free months of service. Since the incentives began, Sue says they have added 100 customers. The free signups will continue until $45,000 received from the county runs out. The Community Foundation and the Park City Chamber Bureau also launched a restaurant cohort with up to a dozen restaurants learning about how they can implement food collection and composting within their operations.
We've partnered with a consulting firm that's helping them individually go through, you know, their operation procedures and how they can be effective in collecting food waste and composting.
As the program grows, it'll become available to more residents throughout the county. Residents in Summit County can sign up for free curbside composting through the end of 2025 by using the codes ZeroFoodWaste5 or ZeroFoodWaste16 based on what size bin you want.